think it is. These things can't exactly be measured. The book, Dante said, taking it back from Gabe and running his fingers over its cover. Does that mean... A high ring of shattering glass sounded from the street. Angry shouts followed at its heels. Dante waited for them to settle up who owed whom a bottle before going on. Do you think... The door burst open. Robert half collapsed through it, sword in hand, face bearing that tight, flat expression he'd held the night of the fight around the campfire. Something's going on downstairs, he said. Just a couple of drunks, Dante said. No, downstairs in the monastery. What's going on? Gabe said, getting to his feet in a way cassocked hills shouldn't be able to do. One of the monks killed one of the other monks, Robert said. He leaned into the hall, and a moment later Blaze swung back into the room, sword out, breathing heavily. Killed? Gabe said. A bunch of them have swords and staffs and things, Blaze reported. It looked like a few of them came in from the street. None of the monks would kill anyone. It's happening, Dante said, the back of his neck tingling the way it did when he heard an animal creeping through the woods by dark, or when he finished a book that read like it had been inspired by the gods themselves. The fighting starts in the temples. That's what they said. Yells and crashes of wood and steel came up from the first floor, underlining his point. Shit. Gabe took a long breath through his nose and nodded at the doorway. You should leave. You've got other troubles to see to.
A compelling argument, Robert said.
No, Dante said, drawing his sword. We can stop this here. They won't take this one place.
Going to save the whole town too, Gabe said.
Dante stuck the point of his blade into the wooden floor. It came to him all at once. The idea that he was more than an arrow shot from another man's bow, unable to deviate his course once he'd been set in motion. He'd known Gabe less than an hour, but already he liked him. By nature, he had no patience for the self-important mysticism of the men of the gods, but something about this monastery and the quiet conviction of its men was too important to hand over to the Aronites. Kali might say their passage to Narashtovik was too important to risk their lives in this place, but he was almost 300 miles away. Was too wrapped up in his own dealings to venture out into all this strife. Dante was here now, and here, he thought, was a place worth saving.
We can't defend the whole town, Dante said, but we will fight them off here before we run like rabbits. At least you'll have time to prepare for whatever comes next.
Besides, Blaze said, we still need that token. I'd rather die here than get eaten by barbarians 1,000 miles from here.
Idiots. Gabe said, with neither a smile nor a scowl.
He lifted a sturdy, dark, wooded chair and snapped off a leg. He swung it through the air.
Well, let's go see what the fuss is about.
Yes, Dante said, neck tingling again. He pulled at his sword and found it was stuck in the floorboards. He yanked again and stumbled into Blaze's back.
What's your hurry? Blaze muttered.
He put an arm in front of Robert before they left the door.
Me first. You're unsound.
Physically, perhaps.
Tell me who not to kill before I do it, Blaze called back to Gabe.
They pounded down the stairs. At its base lay the still, bleeding body of the young man who'd answered the door. Blaze and Robert flanked out, facing the two doors in. Gabe's face went slack, and he knelt beside the body. Dante stood over him, beginning a call to the Nether.
Don't, Gabe said. He's dead.
I'm sorry.
Grieve later.
Gabe surged to his feet, chair leg in hand, and took them through the parlor and to the outer entrance of the monastery. Drops of blood shone on the slate flooring. Fresh gashes marred the table in the parlor. Dusty old fabric spilled from a slash in one of the benches. The rooms were empty. Gabe cracked open the front door and peered into the gardens. From deeper inside the monastery, they heard raised voices.
Follow me, Gabe said.
Blaze tried to stay at his side, but the hallway was too narrow for any more than Gabe's bearish shoulders. Dante and Robert jogged at their heels. The Norrin took a right turn, and they emerged into a relatively open room of simple chairs and round, rough-hewn tables, a dining area or meeting hall. At its far end, some 40 feet away, a group of men were pounding on a closed door.
"What's going on here?" Gabe shouted. "We've trapped the usurpers in the kitchen," a bald man in a cassock cried back. "You have swords in your hands," Gabe said, stopping after he'd crossed half the room. "And who are those men with you?"
"They're the gardeners I was telling you about," the monk said, glancing to the men at his sides, dirt-faced men wearing black cloaks and naked swords, one of which streaked blood down its length and tacked against the floor.
"Hanstein," Gabe said in a quiet voice, "lay down your arms. This can end now."
"I thought you were one of us," Hanstein said.
"I thought you were one of us," Gabe cried. "You killed Roger. He was a boy.
There was confusion."
Hanstein pinched the bridge of his nose.
"Help us out, and he'll be the only one."
"Have you ever even read the Gunnigut? Do you remember that second rule, where you may willingly harm no man?"
"Oddly, it mentions nothing about our conduct towards Norrin."
Hanstein smiled briefly.
"I know what you used to be."
"It's time, Gabe.
We will no longer let ourselves be hunted and killed for serving the first among gods."
"Then go serve them in the street," Gabe said, taking a step forward,
"and get the hell out of my monastery."
"Why don't you leave?"
"Because this is the House of Menok,"
Gabe roared, shoulders bunching. The men at Hanstein's side fell back a step, then tightened their grasp on their swords.
"Then let it be reconsecrated in the name of Aron," Hanstein said.
He glared at his swordsmen.
"With their blood!"
They eased forward, leading the way with her blades. Hanstein flung out a hand. Nothing happened.
"I thought you knew who I was," Gabe said.
The men walked forward, leaning into aggressive crouches. Blaze leapt at the lead man, then skipped back, drawing him into Robert's waiting blade. Blood splashed against the slate. Dante swung out his sword, blocking a strike at Gabe, whose hand shook as he absorbed the stream of nether Hanstein had slung at him. Dante screamed and opened a wound across the attacker's forearm. His blade clattered against the ground, and Gabe laid out a pounding backhand with his chair leg. The wood snapped in half on the man's skull, dropping him. Blades clashed to Dante's left, where Blaze and Robert fended off two men. The remaining one on Dante's side fainted, knocking aside the tip of his sword, and Dante spun to dodge the following thrust. It ripped over the thin flesh over his sternum, and he felt the woozy scrape of steel dragging over his bones. He stumbled back. Wrapped in his invisible tussle with the other monk, Gabe stepped forward, leaving Dante behind. Dante scrambled backwards, scooting on his ass. The swordsman swung down, and he rolled away. He tried a swipe at the man's ankles, and his sword was knocked wide. The man leaned forward for a crosswise sweep meant to open Dante's guts, and his sword bounced from Robert's. Robert followed up with a quick poke that drew blood from the man's left side. Dante found his footing and rose next to Blaze, who was falling back under the wolf-like jabs of a pair of attackers.
"Set my blade on fire!"
he hissed at Dante when their shoulders bumped. For once, Dante asked no questions, instead shutting off his mind and gathering the shadows. He wiped his hand in the blood dripping down his chest and flipped a few red drops Blaze's way. His sword whooped with fire the length of the blade.
"I'll drink your souls," Blaze shouted, waving his flaming weapon in their faces.
They actually dropped back, and Dante touched his own sword, shrouding it in a shifting mist of darkness. He fell in beside Blaze.
"I'm going to get the others," Hanstein said,
and from the corner of his vision, Dante saw him run across the room to an open door. Gabe picked up a chair and threw it at his retreating back. It shattered on the wall beside the doorway and dropped into a splintery heap. Blaze and Dante lowered their shoulders and advanced on the remaining two men. A shout sounded to their right, then a flurry of metal strikes too quick to count, and the thunk of a sword burying itself in flesh. Another sword rattled on the ground. Dante glanced back in time to see a man's head spinning over the tiles. Robert staggered back, soaked in blood. Dante turned back to his own fight and saw a sword headed for his face. He batted it aside and slashed down, cutting open the man's boot and bloodying his toes. The man hopped back, yelping. From the front of the room, Gabe was disappearing after Hanstein.
"I'm going to help him," Dante said, sidling away from his attacker.
Robert was red-faced and breathing heavily, but his mouth was twisted in angry joy. Dante sprinted after Gabe, banging his hip on the rim of a table, hearing swords meeting behind him. He plunged into the room on Gabe's heels, and the battle in the dining room immediately grew muffled. Hanstein stood in the middle of a dark hallway. Maroon drapes and pious paintings hung from the walls. Dante reached Gabe's side. Hanstein did something with his hand, and Dante's ankles and knees locked, and he skidded over the stone flooring. Then his elbows were tight, mid-swing, his wrists and fingers frozen. He couldn't turn his head. Every breath felt like a massive hand was squeezing back against his chest. He tried to blink, and his eyelids fluttered. Hanstein snapped his fingers, and a gout of flame whooshed down the hall. Gabe grunted and tamped it down with an angled strike of his hand, like a cougar stretching out his claws for the rump of a buck. He took a step forward, and so did Hanstein. They both raised their arms at each other, and for a few long moments they looked to be trying to carry a 15-foot invisible table between them. Shoulders shifting, wrists bending over their heads, muscles shaking, Gabe's columnar body bulging like a boulder, and Hanstein's spindling limbs twitching beneath the drooping folds of his cassock. Dante watched, literally paralyzed. He felt hot blood slipping down his doublet, a faint breeze where the cloth had been opened by the attacker's sword. The two men huffed and grunted and spat curses between their teeth. He could feel the tingle of power in the air, the way his arm hair stood when clean clothes rubbed dry skin, or the way the air felt during a storm. But more so, as if they stood within the Thunderhead itself. An audible crackle started between the two men, cutting over a droning hum that twisted Dante's stomach. Sweat dripped from the Norin's broad brow. He could see the veins on Hanstein's temples. Gabe's lips opened, showing those flat teeth clenched tight. He growled, an animal noise that started low and suddenly burst into a guttural howl.
"To hell with this!"
He waded forward, one foot, then another, as ponderous as if he were walking underwater. A step at a time, he closed the distance between himself and the other monk. Too late, Hanstein deciphered his plan. The thin man bent back, and Gabe reached forward with a hand as thick and knotty as the bole of a pine. He closed his fingers around the other man's neck and lifted him into the air. They grimaced at each other, the nether flipping between them in swift, streaking shadows, and then Gabe slammed Hanstein against the wall. His head and hands flopped. Howling again, Gabe lifted him higher, wrapping the trunks of his arms around Hanstein's back and hugging him to the barrel of his body. Dante wanted to close his eyes, but whatever Hanstein had set on him held fast. He watched as Gabe's shoulders flexed and elbows tightened, heard the dreadful snap, saw Hanstein's body bend like a broken fish. Gabe raised the corpse and flung it down the hall. He stared after it, shoulders heaving, breath whistling through his wide nostrils. He turned then, and Dante was glad his bladder seemed as frozen as the rest.
"Kali never taught you about rooting," Gabe rasped.
Dante tried to shake his head. He tried to speak, managed little more than the weak moan of a sleeper caught in nightmare. Gabe closed his eyes and folded his hands, and Dante flopped to the floor. He'd been mid-stride when the thing had caught him. Gabe cleared his throat and spat toward the body.
You'd have died long before you met Samarand.
Show me, once this is over.
Of course.
Dante nodded, gazed down the hallway at the pile of robes that looked like a man, but bent in a way men didn't.
I thought you had vows against things like that.
Gabe pushed out one of his bearded cheeks with his tongue.
What is it with you heathens? Always searching for a contradiction. The laws of men aren't like the laws of man. You don't break one and whoops, it's time to pop your neck. Menoch, in his wisdom, knows there are times his holiest laws must be broken.
He gazed at the corpse he'd made.
He'll judge me fair.
Robert's hurt, Blaze shouted from around the corner. They started, then turned back to the room they'd left. The floor was awash in blood. Stretched out by the last of the armsmen, Robert lay prone, rolling back and forth on his stomach.
Gabe knelt beside him, turning him to his back and pinning his shoulder to the ground to stop his mindless rocking. He pulled back cloak and chainmail. The wound on his chest had reopened, and below it, another gaped on his belly where a few of the links had been split. Narrow, but deep. Dante saw something slimy and purplish winking beneath the welling blood. He put his hand over his mouth.
Stay sharp, Gabe said, pressing his unbloodied fist to his mouth. I'm going to be out of it for a minute.
You can put that out any time, Blaze whispered, nodding to his sword laying on the ground, its flames licking at the stone.
Dante waved a distracted hand, wiping them away.
Gabe mumbled to himself, planting his hands on Robert's shallow rising chest.
Dante glanced down from the door he'd been watching and saw motes of light and darkness swathing Gabe's fingers. They left him in a murky curtain, the way rain looks, falling from a distant cloud, soaking into Robert's body. Robert tensed, arching his spine, teeth bared, the cut skin folding together, pushing out blood and small meaty things that made the back of Dante's mouth taste bitter. Gabe wiped it away with Robert's cloak. The skin was red, welted, as disturbed as a fresh burn, but it was whole. Robert went limp. He blinked as the others looked on. Gabe slumped back, resting on his elbows, chin touching his chest.
The problem with getting stabbed, Robert started, then turned his head and spat blood, is you can only kill the man who did it once.
I got him, Blaze said, shaking Robert's shoulder so hard the man's head wobbled. His sword got caught in your chain and I stuck mine through his heart.
Robert sat up, closing his eyes. He rubbed the side of his head.
Surprised they hung around at all after your sword literally caught fire.
I know, Blaze said. It looked great, didn't it? Like a demon come to take them away.
Yeah, Robert admitted. You fought like one, too.
He cracked open one eye.
What's all that pounding? Or is that in my skull, too?
Dante realized he'd been hearing it, too. Behind the locked kitchen door. He crossed to it, put his ear to the wood. The pounding started again, and he jerked back, rubbing his ear. He cupped his hands to the door, shouted into them.
Stop that!
The hammering ceased.
What? I said stop that! No!
Open up, we're friends of Gabe's.
That's a rather old trick, don't you think?
Said the voice on the other side of the door.
It's true.
I think we'll take our chances in here. It's worked so far.
Look, Dante said, glancing back over his shoulder to where Gabe still rested. If you don't open up, I'm going to get Gabe over here and he'll break it down. He heard murmurs on the other side. Someone cleared his throat.
We're armed. Good. Then if I'm lying, you can cut me down.
More murmurs. Longer this time.
Just a minute, the voice said. We'd just about had these bars all set.
Dante heard squeaks and the scrabble of tools against the door. Something clinked mutely on the other side. The process repeated. Behind him, Gabe got to his feet, followed by Robert and Blaze, and they came to Dante's side.
What was that thing you did to Robert? Dante said to the Norren.
Gabe raised an eyebrow.
Fixed him.
With the specks of light?
Ether, Gabe said,
giving him a look like he just said breakfast was his favorite meal of the day.
It's better at building than the shadows. Restoring and creating is all it can do, in fact. Didn't Cully teach you this stuff either? This is elementary.
His methods are a little unorthodox, Dante said.
Wood jangled against the floor, on the other side, and then a lock clicked. The door swung back, revealing four men in cassocks crouching back, kitchen knives held ready in their hands.
Gabe!
Cried a short, elderly monk. The Norren stepped forward and they embraced. The monk gazed past him to the wreckage of the dining room.
Brother Hanstein and a couple of the others let in some black-caped men. They told us to join them or leave. When Roger told them this was a house of peace, one of the men struck him down.
I saw, Gabe said.
He hunched his shoulders.
Brother Hanstein is dead.
I'm sorry, the old man said.
I don't understand why he did this.
The others nodded, saying nothing for a time.
Who are these with you?
One of the monks said, to break the silence.
Friends, Gabe said, gesturing to them in turn. Dante, Blaze, and Robert Hobble. They helped put down this treason.
There's going to be more, Dante said. Where did the other turncoats go?
Hard to say,
the old monk said, knitting his brow.
We put a lot of wood between us and them. We weren't prepared.
Better than being put to the sword, brother.
Gabe curled his arm and massaged the ham hock of his biceps.
Find yourself some real weapons. We'll be ready for whatever comes next.
We'll secure the place, Robert said.
His face was pale, but his voice was steady.
Get some arms and then bar everything but the front door. We don't know what's going on out there.
Gabe led them into the hallway where Hanstein had died. They stepped over his twisted body, and one by one flung open the doors to the cells. Every third or fourth held a black cassocked monk clutching a book or a fireplace poker or a brass candlestick. Gabe clapped them on the back and sent them to the dining room to meet the others. They locked the door leading to the inner gardens and Menok's shrine and moved to the second floor. More of the same. Quiet rooms, hunkering monks, whom Gabe calmed with soft words and the boys encouraged with grins and whoops. The small, cramped rooms of the two spires held no one. In the top room of the second spire, a dome-roofed space so small Gabe could have stood at its center and touched both walls at once. He took a dull white object from above the wide window and pocketed it. He gestured to the stairway.
I don't get this big plan of theirs, Blaze said as they headed downstairs. Three monks and a few guys with swords. Take a monastery which wouldn't happen in the first place if there were four good men here able to defend it. No offense to you, Gabe. Then hang around till the law comes by to pry them out. How is this thing taking hold?
Confusion and exploitation, Robert said. Start up a religious squabble the watchmen want no part of. Start rallying the commoners. Go from there. All they need's a toehold. He shrugged, playing off his guess.
That's what I do anyway.
By the time they got back to the dining room, the monks were abuzz with work. A few carried ceremonial swords and other relics in the rope belts around their waists. Others bore wood axes and hoes and iron-banded walking staffs. A pile of pokers and knives and other fallback weapons lay beyond the kitchen door.
No sign of the others, Gabe said to Nolan. Who else was with Hanstein?
Alan and Romsey.
Alan, Gabe said, face crumpling. Nolan nodded, eyes downcast.
Gabe sucked a deep breath and clenched his fist.
How did that happen? I'd imagine him cutting off his own nose before he betrayed his brothers.
Most of the Order remains loyal, Nolan said, gesturing to the monks and hired boys scurrying off with hammers and nails and planks of wood. Don't be tainted by the poison in a few men's hearts.
I'll meditate when there's time. I have to see these men off, he said, nodding to Dante and the others. Don't let anyone in the door. Steadfast.
We'll give them a taste of hell if they try, Nolan said, shaking a gardening spade in his fist.
Gabe led them to the front door, where they'd arrived little more than an hour earlier. He stuck his head through, looking on the oddly quiet street beyond the gates, then stepped into the yard. The sun had fallen during the fight. Dante sucked down deep breaths of the cold night, suddenly certain they could retake the rest of the town if only they had the time.
We had horses, Robert said.
They'll be around the side.
The three muscly horses munched on spilled oats, oblivious to the racket inside the walls of the monastery. Gabe patted one on the shoulder. His eyes were nearly level with its own.
Dante, the rooting is a simple thing, he said, stroking the horse's brown mane. You'll feel its tendrils beneath your feet in the ground. Cut out those roots, and you'll cut out its hold.
It's common among the priests.
Not common, but deadly when used right. More subtle than that gruesome thing you did back there, and not half as sapping to your strength. Quick, call to the nether.
Dante took three quick breaths and held his hands an inch apart. The same stiffness as Hanstein's summons took his joints. He fought to move his hands.
Ignore it, Gabe said. Focus on the tension at your soles.
He did feel it then, as if the bottoms of his feet had extended down into the dirt, locking him in place with 100 wiry roots. Fingers quivering, he guided the nether to the pressure in his boots. The roots withered. His knee twitched. At once the whole thing snapped, and he stepped forward, wild-eyed.
Good. Don't panic if they sneak it past your guard. Clear it away like brambles in your path.
Easy enough, Dante said. Don't see why Kelly never mentioned it.
He's always been more of a theorist, Gabe said, shrugging.
He smiled a little, his first since before the fighting.
Here.
He reached into his pocket, revealed the object he'd taken from the spire. A set of spiraling horns, bound in the middle by a flat section of skull, neither prong longer than a man's middle finger.
Wear it around your neck. It should get you into the city.
Should, Robert said.
They're the horns of a nasty little thing called a kappa, that lives in the snows of the north. Should prove you're a native, or at least you're a frequent visitor.
He bit his lip.
Of course, they are a wary people, and it's been a while since I've been there.
Would be nice to shrug off a little trouble, Robert said, shaking his head. Seems to follow on our heels.
Gabe cocked his head.
Does trouble follow you? Or is it troubles found all corners of the world?
Afraid it's a combination of the two, Robert said, favoring Blaze and Dante with an unflattering glance.
I see what you mean.
Come with us, Blaze said, stepping forward and tilting back his head to meet Gabe's deep-set brown eyes. We need you.
They need me here. I'm not a warrior.
But there's only going to be more of this. If this won't convince you to hit back, what can?
Gabe drew himself up to his full height and breadth and stared Blaze down. The boy's eyes danced away.
I knew the horror they brought before they touched this temple.
Lenoran said,
I'm supposed to reverse my beliefs because men I'd called friends betrayed me. How petty do you think I am?
I didn't mean that, Blaze said, dropping back a step.
I know, Gabe said in a softer tone.
He looked over the black outlines of the roofs, visible above the willows of the yard.
I couldn't live with myself if I went with you, and found out the monastery had fallen. Who knows? Perhaps we can keep Shay from falling to what's taking the south.
Perhaps, Robert said. He kicked the dirt. Good luck to you.
What way will you take through the mountains?
The pass, I thought.
It'll be snowed. The river way should be open yet.
Yeah, and add a week to the journey, Robert said.
Gabe nodded. You'll see more Norren on the other side. Leave them be, and they ought to extend the same to you. We look more beastly than we are.
He pursed his mouth.
No more beastly than any of you, at least.
We're not beastly, Blaze said.
If they do come at you with suspicious intent, say Harnan, Gabe said. It means peace, more or less. Draw it out, though. Briefer vowels mean something more anatomical.
Hanan, Dante tried.
Longer.
Hanan.
Better to err with caution, I suppose.
He nodded at Robert.
Wounds should be fine. You'll need sleep soon, though, and food.
Anything else, Mum? Robert said.
That's it.
Gabe drew up his brows at Dante and opened his mouth as if to say more, then shook his head and looked off toward the street.
You're good men. Don't go dying up there.
Robert nodded and swung himself into the saddle, registering surprise when he felt no pain. Good work, he said down to the Norren. The boys saddled up and Gabe untied their leads. They exchanged goodbyes, and they walked the horses to the gates.
One last thing, Gabe called from the steps of the monastery. When you see Samarand, put a stake through her heart.
Dante twisted in the saddle. What? Is she a vampire?
No, Gabe yelled, but I imagine it'll hurt a lot.
Robert wrinkled his nose. Menok's men are strange ones. They turned into the street, leading the horses past shattered glass and the strewn refuse and fallen knives of a recent struggle. Further up the street, they saw blades flashing in the torchlight. What do you think? Blaze said. I think, Robert said, hand drifting toward his sword, if we stop to fight everyone's fights for them, we'll have no time left to reach the end of the world. Yeah, Dante said, touching the scabbing wound on his sternum. No more delays. They cut down a side street. The sounds of skirmish peaked and faded in the still air. Robert kicked his horse up to a trot. They had done something good, Dante thought. When other men spoke of winning a battle, they simply meant they'd survived and stood their ground while the other side had fled and died. In Shay, they'd preserved a spark of thought that would have been blown out by the winds of upheaval if they hadn't risked themselves to save it. And as he rode, it was with a centered pride that he'd chosen to act and had chosen well. By the time he remembered, he'd forgotten to ask Gabe what it meant that he held the true cycle. The town of Shay was nothing but points of light behind them.
Chapter 11 Cold, Dante thought. And then he thought it some more. He toed the inch of snow on the ground until he could see dead yellow burgrass. Cold and hills, with the promise of more hills ahead. He scowled at the blue mounds of mountains on the northern horizon. A couple days away. He tucked his chin into the collar of his second shirt and wondered why anyone bothered to do anything. They stopped at a farmhouse the day after they left Shea, where the owner had waved a pitchfork in their faces until Robert used the fact they hadn't already ridden down and slaughtered the man to convince him they weren't bandits. This established, the man accepted a decent chunk of their remaining coin for extra clothes and blankets and bread and cheeses and meats from his cellar. The clothes were rough-spun things, thick with the scent of sweat and dirt, and scratchy as falling into a barrel of drunk cats, but Dante figured it was better than dying of the cold that seemed to grow deeper with every step toward the mountains. They passed a few more fields and farmhouses that afternoon, but had seen nothing but wind-scabbed hills in the day and a half since. Just enough snow to get their boots wet whenever they dismounted. Just enough damp to let them hope they'd find some dry wood down in the drawers. But when they settled down for the night, they couldn't get a spark to catch. Dante cupped the nether in his hands and set a white burst among their tinder and got nothing but thick plumes of pale smoke. They huddled together, breath steaming, shivering, until sleep overtook them. The road roughened, narrowed. The ruts disappeared. Ostensibly, others took this way, and Dante knew entire caravans crossed it. In the half-year, they could count on the pass to be clear. But they saw no specks of other riders, saw no sign of the campfires and gutted game and other spoor of travellers. The mountains hung huge, as ground-hugging clouds, blue with pines and white with snow, distant and implacable as the fixed stars. The wind seemed to grow colder by the hour. Robert sang crass drinking songs. A couple times Blaze told stories about the battles his dad had seen. Mostly, he'd rolled around Bressel as a merchant's bodyguard, but in his early years, when he was just a couple years older than Blaze, he'd been a swordsman of the young king's army during the annexation of the southwest coasts. None of the dirty brawls Blaze and Dante had seen, Blaze said. Formations, ranks, thousands of men and scores of wagons, and when the battle was over, a far greater army of magpies and crows and kites. Blood so thick you could smell it for miles. Blaze told these things with a faint smile, a flicker of envy in his eyes. Robert tutted about how those things really weren't so grand, and besides, if Blaze liked them so much, there was always another war and the need for men to die in it. Blaze rebutted with the belief he'd make a fine soldier, earn himself a knighthood. Robert just laughed. Kind words from the king, maybe, but he'd never eat at the same table. Men were born into such things, he said, not made. Dante told them of half-mad Jack Hand, how he'd sacrificed his brothers' wives to see if he could bring them back, how his brothers had mutilated him for it, and his long imprisonment, his insurrection, and how he'd bested the rebellion meant to replace him. He'd lived 180 years, Dante said, and had 12 sons, whose own sons staked out an empire from the far eastern shores all the way to the wide fields of Colin. Robert dubbed them good stories, if the incestuous intrigue of royalty was what tightened your drawers. But the oldest man he'd met had claimed 87 years, and that man had looked like something left in the ground a season too long. Dante shrugged. Things were different then, he said. Jack Hand was a sorcerer. Before he could die, he was taken to the right wrist of the constellation of Orion, the sign whose crown had burst countless years ago into a pink cloud you could see during the day's full light. The book said its light had lasted for a complete year and rivaled the moon in the night. After it had faded from sight, when people looked up at that headless alignment of stars, they'd seen not the body of Orion, but the currents of twin rivers flowing across the heavens. The clouds bulged blackly above their heads, and tiny flakes of snow twinkled like dust in the autumn sun.
Within another hour, it was falling as thickly as a burst pillow, puffing against their faces. Dante pulled his collar over his nose and his hood over his brow. He looked out on the whitening world through a slit of fabric, breath warming his nose, and tried to imagine what the world would look like on the other side of the mountains.
"Let's camp up now," Robert said a couple hours before nightfall. "I want to have a full day to tackle the pass."
"How does it look?" Blaze said, peering up at the deep fold between two skyscraping peaks. Robert shrugged.
"It looks like a pass."
"And you look like you're stupid, but that doesn't give me any idea just how stupid."
"Well, it's got snow, see? That white stuff?"
Robert pointed to a barely visible squiggle along the flank of the left-hand mountain.
"Guessing just a foot or two so far, other than the drifts."
"What if it's steeper?" Dante said.
"Start praying it isn't."
Robert patted his horse's shoulder.
"Shouldn't take more than 2 days, unless one of you does something especially dumb. Not that it's very far, mile-wise. Just takes a lot longer."
Dante woke 3 times that night to shake snow from his blanket. They'd bedded down in a gully right off the road, which, this close to the mountains, was little more than a scraped path of rock and dirt. But the scrubby little pines weren't enough to stop the winds from pouring down the slopes and pelting them with small, powdery flakes. He tried, without success, to wring his blanket dry that morning. He stuffed it in a sack. Maybe when it froze, he could just beat the ice away.
"Careful where you lead your horses," Robert told them as they started up a steep incline
after a pre-dawn breakfast.
"They can't tell a 10-foot drift from solid ground. Try to stick close to the slope and away from any really smooth-looking snow."
"I think I'll just follow you," Blaze said.
"Probably a better idea."
The snow stopped falling shortly after the morning broke, but what was already underfoot got thicker with every hour of travel. By mid-morning, Dante turned in the saddle and saw the last of the hills sprawled beneath them like frozen whitecaps. Pines clung to the slopes to the left, chunky black rocks fell away to the right, crusted with ice and snow. Dante had imagined the pass would be an impossibly narrow line carved out of the mountain face, but it averaged about 30 feet wide, sometimes opening into an expanse that might be a meadow in summer weather. They rode single file, slowing to a crawl the couple times the pass closed to the width of 2 horses abreast. At those times, Dante tried to keep his eyes from the way the snow tumbled down for a couple 100 feet, before ending in a valley bottom broken by the black bodies of snow-dusted boulders. Winds knifed through the peaks, throwing fine, stinging snow in their faces. Dante's clothing grew stiff. Tiny drifts formed in its folds. The horses plowed through foot-deep snow, sometimes plunging past their knees. The beasts stepped high, snorting, tossing their heads. Robert spoke softly, clucking his tongue, letting his mount hug the rising slope. Just after noon, his horse swooped to its chest in the snow and bounded forward, its whinnies carrying on the wind. Once it scrambled clear to snow below its knees, Robert halted, panting in the cold.
"How much further?" Dante said, drawing up behind him.
"Can't see too well," Robert said.
He hunched his shoulders and gazed uphill into the mists of the clouds. More than half their daylight was gone. Dante blew into his hands. They were stiff, inflexible, as if their motions lagged a second behind his thoughts.
"It's still going up. I can see that much."
Robert brushed snow from his cloak. He folded down his collar and wiped ice from his eyebrows and mustache.
"Should be close to the crest. Dark's going to come fast up here. Won't want to press the horses once it does."
"I don't exactly want to stay here overnight," Dante said.
"And I don't want to get old," Robert said, "but I'm afraid it's my best alternative."
Can we get back to somewhere less freezing already? Blaze said. I need to take a piss, and I don't want it snapping off. They waited around to eat a handful of bread and drink from skins filled with melted snow, then got the horses going again. Dante watched steam rise from the shoulders of Robert's mount. He was tired, cold. He glared across the snow-crusted slopes. They had hundreds of miles of travel after this. A wrong step, a hidden drift, and this voyage would be over. The places where men lived were full of people who wanted him dead, and the places where men didn't live were hell holes of ice and snakes and sudden cliffs. How did anyone get as old as Callie? Pure stubbornness? Luck? Hanging around a forgotten temple while he sent the young man out to tramp around the wilds? That was part of it, he'd wager. He'd further wager it had something to do with the book in his pack and the things it represented. Callie could make him explode by looking at him. Gabe could scrape up his chunks and patch them back together. That monk, Hansteen, could lock Dante in his tracks, could have killed him at his leisure, if Gabe hadn't been there to snap his spine. Even Will Palomar, the man he'd slain with the bolt of fire in the woods outside Wetton, could have struck him down, he thought, if not for the man's arrogance and the blind chance of Dante's sentry. Sometime he would die, if not during this journey to head off the war coming for the Southlands, then in another 2 or 3 decades. One moment he'd be alive, the thing that made him embedded firmly in the fortress of his skull, and then the next instant, perhaps before he understood what was happening, he'd be separated from his body. And if his body held a part of whatever it meant to be Dante, he'd never be the same again. Maybe he wouldn't remember anything once he'd gone from Earth to the space beyond the stars. Maybe he wouldn't be able to think at all. Why did people have to die? Why couldn't they know what happened once your body died and rotted to waste? Crags climbed on all sides. He felt like he was walking in the bottom of a bowl. The clouds had lifted from the pass itself, but still streaked so low Gabe probably could have stretched up and touched them. It started snowing again, and he blinked against the freezing bite of the flakes against his face. His eyes grew watery. Beneath his collar, his nose was running. Robert called something over his shoulder, and the wind snatched it away. Dante cupped a hand to his ear and shook his head. Robert drew up and leaned over.
I said, that's the crest up ahead.
It all looked the same to Dante. Snowy and rocky and cold. Obscured by walls of wind-driven snow. The shallower drifts were back down to a mere foot deep, he saw. They rode on. He thought reaching the top of the pass would be inspiring, triumphant, but when they got there all he saw was more snow and a carpet of clouds in the valley to the right. The dark lump of Robert's horse leading the way looked like an anonymous stranger lost in the nowhere. Snow continued to batter his face. He'd always thought it fell out of the bottoms of the clouds, but here he was inside one, and the snow was still falling. He tipped back his head to try to get a glimpse of the clouds above, but all he saw was close-pressed grey. Dante's horse slipped then, and he grabbed wildly for a hold on the saddle. Hundreds of pounds of bones and guts and flesh struggled beneath him. The horse bucked its front shoulders, and Dante heard Blaze cry out as if the world tumbled on its head, and he threw out his arms and crumped face first into a snowbank. He kicked his legs and fell back on his ass.
You all right? Blaze shouted. It's cold, he said, shaking snow from his chest and arms, wiping his hood over the slush melting on his nose and cheeks.
His gloves were soaked, and his hands stung like they'd been struck. He put a foot in the stirrup, and the horse took a step forward, and he had to hop along and hang onto the saddle to keep from falling again. Dante patted the beast, mumbling baby words he hoped the others couldn't hear.
then hauled himself up.
"Soft landing," he shouted into the wind. Robert's hood whipped around his face as he considered Dante. Then the man turned and continued on.
Robert slackened his pace, letting his horse feel its way through the drifts and the slippery descent. Dante had been gripped by a slow kind of terror on the way up the pass, but as the day drew on, he found himself increasingly distracted from the imminence of his death on these rocks. What would Narashtovic look like? Would it be one big fortress to ward off the constant sieges? Would its buildings look like monstrous tombs? How would he find Samarand? Would she be like its queen, gazing down on the snow-wrapped city from the safety of her towers? Or would she be like Kali, an underground figure, emerging from hiding only to meet with the others of her order? When he found her, how would he kill her? Leaping from the secret of a dark alley to slip a knife in her spine? Or meeting her in open single combat, like all the stories of two foes meeting in all the legends of the world? He realized he didn't know a thing about the dead city, other than it wasn't really peopled by the dead. Why hadn't he asked Kali more? Would it have helped? Was there any sense in trying to plan before he was there to see Narashtovic with his own two eyes? His horse slipped again, leg jolting, and without thinking, Dante yanked the reins close to his body. The horse stopped short. He took a deep breath, fighting the rushing wind that wanted to tear it from his mouth. He turned his head away from the gales. Stay in the moment. There were hundreds of miles ahead of them yet. There would be time to brood when a misstep wouldn't send him plummeting into a frozen abyss. He hurried to catch the couple steps he'd lost to Robert, face flushed with a vein-flooding rage. What was wrong with him? Why was he so afraid of the cold and the heights? Robert was managing just fine. Blaze wasn't complaining. Either he'd die, or he wouldn't. There was no in-between, and either way, he wouldn't have to worry. He was so sick of the mantle of panic he let himself feel whenever he faced the slightest trouble. It was disgusting, it was commonplace, and it was weak. He spit into the swirling snow. It was time to become something more than the sum of his emotions. Robert slogged along, and Dante slogged behind him. He made his mind go quiet and endured. It was impossible to tell how much time was passing. Light continued to fight its way through the mist and the snow, but who knew how much was left? He hummed to himself, having heard you couldn't feel fear when you were humming. Blaze didn't seem to notice. He made himself recall from memory entire passages of the Cycle of Aron, the opening verse. The stars shimmered on the waters, and for 30 years Aron took their measure. As he held the nail of the north, Tame jostled his shoulder, and all came loose, and down came the waters to drown out the land. Near the end of the first chapter, and Aron said to Van, father of Eric Draconat, make no sacrifice, for it shall all be mine in time. Much later, when Aron had disappeared as an active force, and the tome turned to kings and priests, Gil-galel rode 7 times around the keep, shaking his sword and naming the 7 bodies of the heavens, and at the 7th circle the keep fell, and the king was no more. Fragments, half-remembered stories, scores of names. Again he forgot the trail. It had stopped snowing at some point. The stuff on the ground was deeper than it had been at the wind-scoured gap at the peak of the pass, now swallowing the horses to their knees, but it no longer lashed Dante's face. The mists began to lift. Sometimes he could see the green smears of snow-bent pines 200 yards away, and then it was gone, and he could see the entire trail twisting its way along the side of the mountain, and the skies rose until the clouds hung not on his face, but 1,000 feet above, and to his right, in the valley between the bodies of the mountains, he could see a long, silent lake, its waters cobalt and shining sapphire, and at times a creamy, scintillating green he'd never seen in all the world. His breath caught. "What kind of sorcery are we heading into?" he said to Robert. The wind had dropped to a strong breeze, and he no longer had to shout to compete with its moaning grief.
"That's just glacier water, you ninny," Robert said, but his gaze fixed on it while his shoulders stayed in swing with the rhythm of his horse. "It's nothing special."
"Do you see that?"
Blaze said behind him.
"Yeah. It looks like burning glass."
Dante nodded, eyes clinging to the shelf of ice above the lake. Ice that was white at its cap, blue as a frozen summer sky in its middle, that same otherworldly green at its feet. The wind hushed, and all he could hear was the snow as it crumpled and squeaked under the horse's hooves. The air was cold and clean in his lungs. They followed a curve in the trail, and a wedge of rock and pines occluded the aching blue lake. Dante kept glancing back, glancing to where the valley should be, wanting one more glimpse of the hidden waters. Robert pushed them on till the light ceased gleaming from all that white snow to be stolen by the westerly peaks. They were still in the mountains proper, as far as Dante could tell, but the cold was less stunning, the wind less biting. Robert spied a broad, flat break in the pass a few minutes downhill and took them there, tying the horses to the pines that would offer them some shelter. He started to scoop away the knee-deep snow with his gloved hands, just enough space to lie down in. When they did, Dante saw their bodies would be hidden from sight and wind. He and Blaze pitched in, sweeping away the snow with their boots, grateful for an excuse to flex their numb, sodden toes. It was nearly dark by the time they finished. Robert straightened his back and considered their work.
"There, that wasn't so bad, was it?" he said. "Nobody died. Fell off a cliff? Froze to death?"
"There's still time," Blaze said, wiping his nose.
"Hard part's over. Tomorrow we'll get back down in the hills. Might not even be snowy."
"It's the north," Dante said.
"So what?"
Robert clapped his hands together.
"It's just the north, not another world. You boys need to get out more. Besides, mountains make the weather act screwy. You never know what it's like back in reasonable elevations."
"Couldn't these people have started their little rebellion in the summer?" Blaze mumbled. "Would that be too much to ask?"
He rummaged through the saddlebags, picking out some food. He tossed the heavy wad of Dante's blanket at his chest.
"Catch!"
Dante caught it and almost fell back into the snow. It had frozen or something. Thick to begin with, it now weighed 10 or 15 pounds. He stretched up his arms and tried to roll it open, frowning when it drooped to but a slightly less creased position, then shook it hard, sending ice particles flying into the last of the light.
"This stinks," he said.
"Ah, it's not that bad," Robert said through a mouthful of cheese. "At least we've got blankets. Think how bad it would be if we were up here naked."
"Why would we be up here naked?" Blaze said.
"But just think if we were."
"There's no possible reason we would ever be up here naked."
Robert shrugged and took another bite.
"I'm just saying. Some years it snowed in 6 weeks ago. We've been lucky."
"Huzzah!"
Blaze said. He wrapped himself in a couple blankets and stared out on the snowfields, on the black of the trees and the grey of the unlit snow. The clouds parted, and a three-quarter moon washed over the valley with pale rays.
"Doesn't that make it all worthwhile?"
Robert said, scratching his beard and smiling.
"No," Blaze said.
"I'm cold," Dante said.
"Lyle on the rack, then go to sleep.
You may hate this day, but you'll be able to remember the story 20 years from now. Assuming the gods suffer a collective collapse of reason and decide to extend your whining lives that long.
Robert got up and stamped around the camp.